All right. We're back. BTST's podcast, meeting you where you are. This is our second episode.
Yep.
And I am Chris Simon.
And I'm Jada McCray.
Wow, she actually introduced herself today with no problem.
Only today. Next time, I need a host to introduce me.
Speaking of hosts introducing people, Jada, how about you introduce our wonderful guest for today?
You mean not everyone knows who she is?
The wonderful woman with the pink lapel.
I guess she's not just a celebrity to us. She's Dr. Jude Boyer Patrick. She's our medical director here. She's a noted author. An esteemed noted author.
Bestseller.
She gets all the laurels, all the accolades, all the glory. She's awesome.
She's a mother. She's a wife. A daughter.
Child of God.
Dr. Boyer, how are you?
It's great. It's awesome. And I'm happy to be here today.
Well, awesome to have you here. And that means more than just those words that we're speaking about right now, because today we're talking about breast cancer and how it affects people and their mental health. And Dr. Boyer was one of our survivors of breast cancer. Hence the reason she has this beautiful pink lapel. What is that, a corsage?
Yep.
And I have my pink shirt on. We look like a prom date in here, don't we?
You guys look very cute, but I didn't get the memo.
I didn't think you needed the memo, Jada. It's October. Everyone wears pink in October.
I literally don't have 31 days worth of pink clothes to wear, so.
I'm surprised you didn't go buy 31 days of pink dresses. Not you. You know what I mean, George? So, Dr. Boyer, let's get right to it, I guess. Can you talk to us about your experience with it? What happened? I know it wasn't one of those traditional things. You weren't going in for a regular screening at the time. Can you explain to everyone what happened?
You know, I think that there is so much out there that bombard women on the do's and don'ts of whether you should or should not have a mammogram, that I have to say that when I got a letter from the radiologist in August saying it's time for your yearly mammogram, I said to my husband, I'm not going. Mm-hmm. I'm not going. I don't want that radiation in my body.
Mm-hmm. So a mammogram, they actually do radiation?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, because it's an x-ray.
So it's not so, just a check. Because I see the commercials and they say you should go get checked or you should do a self-examination. That's not the same thing they do when you go
No.
You got to excuse me.
They put women through torture.
I hear that they're squeezing and squishing and references to pancakes.
Absolutely.
Walk us through.
Well, I mean, you know, you go into the room and they put your breasts in a machine and squish it down and take an x-ray picture of it. And that is what happens. And it's not comfortable. And so a lot of women don't want to do it because, again, there's a lot of controversy in the literature about whether it helps or it doesn't help. And so, you know, in my mind, my last one in 2015 was fine. Don't need to go. Mm-hmm. So then I got another letter in October. This is your second notice. You need to come in. And I said to my husband, not going in. Then in November, I got the last letter saying, this is your last letter saying you need to come in.
Wow.
And then after the election, and I again said I blame Hillary Clinton because the stress of the election was so horrible that
she's
I woke up.
She blamed for everything.
Poor Hillary. And I love Hillary. I think
there's a blame that needs to go a lot more directions that we're not going to go into.
Not Hillary.
Right now.
But I think the stress of wanting her to win so badly and watching the news every day, you know, I woke up one day with a pain. And that's what got it to me. And
I woke up after election day with a pain as well.
Oh, yeah. Deeper than heartache, I tell you.
Yeah.
And I really, you know, when my husband and I talk about it, we really, really, truly believe God, you know, put his finger on me because I think it's important for women to understand and remember cancer is called the silent killer. Mm-hmm. And it is called the silent killer because many cancers, you have no idea that you have it. Mm. And many times when you find out that you have it, it is too late. Wow. Pancreatic cancer being one. You know, by the time you find out you have pancreatic cancer, a lot of people don't survive past 3 months.
Wow.
And many times they go in 6 weeks. And I have a friend who did die in 6 weeks. Healthy. So, you know, I think it's important to know that when you have a pain or an ache or something, you need to check it out.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, Dr. Boyer, I've heard a lot of times that particularly with breast cancer, if you have a pain in your breast, that's usually not cancer. At least that's an old wives' tale or is it just misinformation?
It, sometimes it isn't, and obviously this time it was, because you could equally have a cyst, and a cyst is painful, or an inflammation. And sometimes your skin could look puckered or yellowed or orange or depending on your race, whatever it looks like. You could have a growth, you could have a pustule, you could have anything. The point is when you see something that's different than what it normally is, you should check it out.
Wow. So
a lot of women don't. They go into
denial. How often should someone go? How often should women go?
They recommend women do it once a year. once a year, just like you have a physical once a year, they recommend a mammogram once a year.
The statistics are pretty high for women. It's not like it's a rare disease.
One in eight.
And how many? And you actually know several people, so your crowd has been a lot more than one in eight.
Absolutely.
You've known a lot more people.
I know a lot more people who have it, people who have survived, and like many people, I have had many friends who have passed. Mm. So you know, you never think it's going to happen to you. I certainly didn't because of my lifestyle choices. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of,
that was really good.
We're just talking about it. Jada was introduced to paleo because of you. Was that it?
Oh no, she will never take credit for that. No.
What was the one that you did?
She's vegan.
Oh, vegan.
She's
okay.
Vegan. And I was really shocked to find out that you had breast cancer because I know, you know, just the kind of lifestyle that you live. You get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to do boot camp. You're a very strict vegan. Very, very, very.
I was telling
strict
a story about
vegan.
When we first met. We were going to dinner. And she sent me all these dietary restrictions. And I'm just like, we might as well just go for a walk or something. Like, I don't even know where we would eat.
Any party you have to make sure that you at least have a couple of vegan options for her.
So, I know you mentioned Hillary. So, obviously, you think the stress may
have. Oh, yeah. Stress plays a part. Environment plays a part. DNA plays a part. Your own immune system plays a part.
Let me ask you about this.
There are so many things that can play into it.
Does a microwave play a part?
Okay.
Because people say you shouldn't put plastic in the microwave and those things.
Well, I will tell you why they don't recommend you use a microwave. In order to get the nutrients that the food actually will give you, it should not be cooked beyond a certain temperature. And they're saying it should be in the 200s. And when you put it in the microwave, it goes all the way up into the 400s. So you may be eating something, but there's absolutely no nutrients in the food. Mm. So it's empty nutrients.
Well, majority of the stuff I eat in the microwave, I'm not eating for nutrients anyway.
Ah, well, in that case,
Have at it.
And I do also know that, you know, microwaves also give off waves, and some people feel that that also contributes. And if you take one of those machines that can measure waves, I've been in a demonstration where you turn on the microwave here, and you can go all the way down a block or so, and you can still, you know, the machine will monitor the waves. And so, if you believe that that can also be a contributing factor, and yes, the chemicals that come off, they say you should, if you're going to microwave, only microwave in glass so that you don't have chemicals. So we can't put a finger on it because I think the reason we don't is because you feel that if I do this, 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 and this, I shouldn't get sick. And then when you get sick, you think, what didn't I do? And then you go into the self-blame. Wow. I certainly did. Mm-hmm. I've done everything that I could do, so why did I get sick? And I can tell you, I went into my anger phase. And my anger phase was I stopped at Mickey D's and had some French fries. I was like, I'm done. I'm going to eat my
rebelled.
French fries. I rebelled because I had not had French fries in like decades.
Yes.
Because of the oil.
Was it almost like, if I'm going to go, I'm going to eat these fries?
My poor husband had a heart attack.
He thought,
did you were throwing in the did you already. Get a Big Mac? Said no, I just got French fries.
Didn't go that far.
Well, and you know what? I confessed it all to my oncologist. I said, I want you to know. I stopped and got a bag of fries, and she goes, "Were they good?" I said, "Awesome."
So let me ask you this, because you, if anyone, should know better. Not saying you should know better than to do that, but obviously, it impacted your mental health.
Absolutely.
So, can you talk to us about how you actually found out and what that did for you, and being a prescriber, a physician? How your mental health was even impacted by that?
I think that when you're faced with any kind of disease that could possibly cause death, it makes you stop and take pause. And, you know, I had a fabulous oncologist by the name of Dr. Diana Griffiths at St. Agnes.
Thank you to her.
She's terrific. And she reminded me that I could not be so focused on this, because you could leave and get in a car accident and die just as easily. And so we're so focused on, let me fix this because I don't want to die, when something else could come out of left, as you say, take an airplane or on a boat ride. Anything can impact you. But we feel that we can fix everything, and we can't. And I think you must go through the grieving stages. I certainly didn't. I mean, I went into my denial, my anger. You know, I had my periods of crying. I certainly did when the chemo that I was under was just so horrific. And I told my husband I was going to have my break point. And my break point was when I lost my hair. Mm-hmm. I said, I can tell you I'm going to be as strong as I can be, but when I lose my hair, that will be it. And sure enough, when I lost my hair, rubber hit the road. I was a hot
mess.
But
you know what? You were very strong through the whole process. We saw you, and you were just a warrior. You always seemed to have a good spirit about it. And I know you had your breakdown moments, and we encourage you that everything was going to be all right. And we, you know, we all prayed for you and with you. And
I think
when you
that's
got your haircut, it was actually, I know you said that would be a bad thing and that was a hurtful thing for you, but you were beautiful with your haircut.
Yeah, you look really cute.
Yeah, it was like the grand opening. You came in and I was just like, wow.
Well, I tell you what, I had no choice. And the joke was all my friends went with me, and I had a terrific support group. I had friends, I had church family, my work family. I had such an incredible support group. Girlfriends said, let's go wig shopping. Mm-hmm. And I actually bought 3 wigs.
Did you ever wear them?
She did, and the day she did, I said, please
moment.
Take the wig off.
I did come in
you
here.
Look better without the wig.
I did come in here to the kitchen, and I had on a wig. It was an afro, and I took it off.
Yes, you did. That was great.
You
should have
got one of those wigs like Jada with the natural hair piece and everything. Like with the what was called about it, Jada?
Jada was like, don't put it back on. Mm-hmm. You look great. And that gave me the courage to say, okay, yeah. I'm not going to do it. And I think that when you look at yourself in a different way and quite frankly, when you are facing your mortality, it changes you. It changes you completely.
What is that like to be a mental health professional? For other people, it may be a little bit different to experience all of these things. But for us, we're mental health professionals. So when we're going through these phases, we know what we're experiencing. We know I'm in denial right now. So how do you work through that simultaneously to know that you're in denial? And as a mental health professional, know that this is all par for the course and this is natural to be in denial. What is that like, that duality?
I think for me, I don't know that I was in denial per se, but what was hard for me is having to come to work and dealing with my patients and trying to be the same as I could mm-hmm. with them. And what I discovered was my patients didn't see anything different about me because I don't put my personal stuff out there for mm-hmm. them. You can't afford to do that. But there were some of my patients who were very astute or who have had a family member who had lost someone. So when they saw my bald head, they were like, okay, Dr. Boyer, what's going on?
Yeah.
And if they asked me, I did not lie. Mm-hmm. The little kids, what's with the hair, Dr. Boyer? And I said, new style, 2017, new style, new look. What's wrong with it? And, you know, one of my patients, she was awesome. She said, I don't know if anything's going on with you, Dr. Boyer, and I hope it's not, but you look bitchin'. Look bitchin'. So I had a lot of different, you know, remarks from my patients, which gave me the courage to go on. And I think that in helping others, I help myself. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me that no matter what I was going through, there are people out there who have it way worse than I do. Mm-hmm. And it just put it into perspective as to how lucky I was, even though I was going through this very, very difficult fight, that I had family, I had friends, I had coworkers, I had a church, I had everyone who was pulling for me, and not everybody is that fortunate.
But it still had to be a scary experience. Like we were talking about, when I'm on an airplane, I'm freaked out. We could hit a bump.
Oh, yeah.
Air, and it's like, I'm just freaking out, think we're going down because it's out of my control. And something like this is out of your control. So you're just sitting there just praying and hoping for the best. I know that plays a big part on your psyche as well.
Oh, yeah. You always feel like you have a sword of Damocles hanging over your mm-hmm. head. And when is it going to fall? And I think it was very important. A very good friend of mine who is a naturopath physician said, you need grief counseling. And mm-hmm. it's important for you to do that for you. And so I do. I go into grief therapy and I talk with my therapist, and I'm lucky because my therapist is a cancer survivor as well.
Awesome.
And so he gets where I'm coming from, and I don't have to explain mm-hmm. where I am because mm-hmm. when I come in a mood, he says, you're too hard on yourself. Mm-hmm. Allow yourself to feel and allow yourself to grieve and allow yourself to understand that this is a very difficult road you're going on. And when you're working and you have to give, you can't give if you don't have anything to give.
Yes. Absolutely.
So my question is, once you beat it, and we can talk about that process and everything else, but did the cloud just lift up? Is it just like, oh my gosh, or are you still kind of like pessimistic? Still?
Anticipating that something horrible
happened. You never, ever really 100% feel. The woman who shares the suite where my therapist is a 10-year survivor of breast cancer. And she has said every year she has to go get her blood drawn. And every year it's like PTSD all over again. Mm-hmm. What is it going to show? You never fully feel free. Because even though right now the pathology says that I have no evidence of disease, it could come back. Because cancer is caused by a virus. And right now, whatever is out there, they can't detect that virus. But that does not mean that the virus isn't sleeping somewhere. And could show up in your brain, show up in your liver, show up in your lungs. It can come back. And certainly I feel that my lifestyle choices have helped put it off until I'm the age I am, and I didn't get it in my 20s and 30s as some young women do, and I'm fortunate to be past 60. So, yeah, because of my lifestyle, that could have played a factor, but my doctor was very clear when she said, because you have had cancer, you are more prone to have it again. Mm. Some women have had it, like Olivia Newton-John, 25 years later, it shows up.
Wow.
25, so you're never really comfortable saying, I've beat it. You just know that right now I don't have it, and I'm going to live for today because tomorrow is not guaranteed.
So the best thing is to get checked regularly for women.
Get checked regularly.
And what about men? I know you mentioned that as well.
1% of men have breast cancer, and I think that, again, no matter if it's mental health, physical health, OB, whatever, you should stay on top of your health no matter
Most men don't even get physicals, and I know for me.
Oh, that's a fact.
I don't even have big apex muscles in my chest, so I should be all right. So should I just assume that?
No, you need to get checked.
Oh, okay.
And I think it's very important. The reason I'm saying this is that we go and we get our blood work, and the blood work looks fine. I can tell you that when I was having treatment, I had to have my blood drawn each and every week. And my blood work was fine each and every week. And my doctor would say, you're healthy, except you have cancer. Mm. Because my blood didn't show anything was wrong with my sugar, my liver, my cholesterol, nothing. It was picture perfect. But I have cancer.
I think if I went, they would be like, sir, you're screwed. Your cholesterol, your sugar intake. We're not even worried about the cancer. We need to worry about something else first. But let's talk about your support group, because that's a very important, not support group, but your support system. How important is it to have a support system? Because I know you have a husband who came to pick you up from work, who cooked dinner. I was about to call him and ask him, did he have seconds? Because I was hungry some days.
He puts Noah from the Notebook to shame. And yeah. I didn't think that could happen. The Notebook?
Well, yes. You know.
Is that the woman movie?
I wouldn't call it a woman.
It's a tear jerker. It's a chick flick. It's a tear jerker. It's a chick flick.
Yeah, I know. Does it come on Lifetime from time to time?
Every now and then.
It's a chick flick.
He's the man that all men must live up to, and that's a hard.
I was very fortunate.
Noah from the Notebook.
Yeah.
I don't think Noah has nothing on me, but I'm going to check it out.
You need to watch it, and you will find yourself sorely lagging. You will cry.
You will cry.
I'm telling you, I got a good husband, but he's not Noah.
But what is the support system?
I was fortunate. My mother lives with me, and my husband was very supportive and went with me to all of my physician appointments and sat with me next to me in the chair in the 3-4 hours that I was having chemo. And that you cannot wink at. He juiced for me and sometimes didn't like my juices, but I wouldn't drink the juice, but he would juice for me and cook a lot of food for me. And not only beyond my husband, I have to say my church family was there. The calls, the emails, the cards. If you come to my home right now, I have a table in the foyer that's filled with cards from not only my church, but my colleagues as well. Mm-hmm. And you cannot live without that kind of support. And there are people who go through this journey without that support. And that's even harder. It's hard enough, but it's even harder.
For those of us who have to be your support system, and gladly so, what can we say?
Well, yeah, what does someone in that position dealing with it, what would they like to hear so that we can better, like, so if it's us or someone listening to us, can better be a support to someone else. Well, what is it that they should do? Because I know at some point you were like, get us, just chill out. Give me these brownies. Get out of my way.
That's right.
You know. But so how can we do a good balance of being supportive to someone, but then also not being, you know, too much?
I think the most important thing is to ask what you need and how can I be of help to you? And, you know, when my best friend was going through her journey and she ended up in the hospital, a crew of us from church went over to her house and cleaned it for her from top to bottom. And her husband told us later that that was just one of the best gifts that we could have done for her.
I would accept that gift.
Yeah, she was bedbound and was very weak and couldn't do anything. And we did that for like 2 Sundays in a row in February in the snow and everything. But, you know, this is what a labor of love is. And so reaching out to someone, giving them a hug, saying, I'll pray for you, or then saying, what can I do to help? Mm-hmm. And if there isn't anything you can do but say pray, then that's it. But at least you've asked, what can I do to help? So
what would you suggest? So that's to people that's supporting someone. What kind of words would you have or advice would you have for someone that's going through this that may not see the light at the end of the tunnel, who may be anxious, like isolating themselves and all that other stuff that is going through this? What kind of words would you
I think you need to live your life to the fullest no matter what you're going through. Life is not guaranteed. And we, if you're not going through something, feel that you can go on like this forever. You can't. Mm-hmm. And I think we tend to take things for granted. And so what this illness has done for me is to help me appreciate more the fact that I wake up every day. And when I fall to my knees, I thank the Lord for waking me up. I mm-hmm. thank the Lord for my home. Mm-hmm. I thank the Lord for my job. I thank the Lord for my family. I give him lots and lots and lots of thanks because yeah. I have blessings immeasurable in spite of this. And I think that's the most important thing to do. You cannot isolate and just stay home and think about it because you will become depressed. Mm-hmm. And then that makes it even harder to treat. So I think you have to look at, there's going to be an end to this. You don't know what that end is going to be. Right now, I'm not finished, but I know it will end. And I've been lucky to get this far with the support that I've had.
So do you still have to take treatments now because you went through the surgery?
Yeah.
It came back, it came out successful. They found no more traces of it. So what is like this post process?
Okay, because in my case, because I had a type of cancer that a lot of African American women get, which is called triple negative. Unfortunately, I was only at stage two. I had chemotherapy.
How many stages are there? Five stages?
Four.
Four stages?
Four. And if you're at stage four, that's not a good stage. So if you get it at zero, one, and two, good.
Oh,
three
so you can't get it at
bad.
A zero.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can get it at a zero.
So a zero almost like it hasn't affected you just yet?
Zero means that there's nothing gone to your lymph nodes. It hasn't metastasized and whatnot. And when you get to state...
What?
Oh, spread. It hasn't spread.
We forget we're talking to a doctor here, right?
It hasn't spread. Whereas, you know, with my best friend who died, she was at stage four and she already had 19 lymph nodes. And when you have your lymph nodes affected... Your blood goes through the lymph nodes and it seeds and spreads to the rest of the body.
Wow. Oh, is that
and
how it works?
Normally with where she was, the life expectancy is about 2 years and God smiled on her and gave her almost five because her son was like six when she was diagnosed and she fought to stay alive for her child. Oh. I was at stage two. So it all depends on what type you have, which is why you have to work so closely with your physician. And in my case, I had to have chemotherapy, which was followed by a mastectomy. Then I am now undergoing radiation and then in another year, reconstruction. Some women opt to not undergo reconstruction. There's a new wave now called the flat ones where they just mm-hmm. take their breasts off and say, I don't want these things. Mm-hmm. Or you reconstruct and you can walk around saying, yeah, they're fake because the real ones tried to kill me.
So I guess you've got to have a sense of humor.
You have to have a
this.
Sense of humor. Yeah. You have to have a sense of humor. And, you know, you have friends who do things like make this beautiful, you know, breast cancer pin for me. And one made me a beautiful little thing that says, you know, kick butt, kick mm-hmm. cancer's butt, a chew in the butt of something. It was hysterical. You see where your friends are. But if you don't have one, there are a lot of volunteer societies and groups out there that can help you if you're not fortunate enough to have that church family, that work family, mm-hmm. that immediate family who is there
so
for you.
So before we conclude, what are some of those places, some of those networks or organizations that people can reach out to? We know Susan G. Komen is always a big one.
Yeah, but there's also the Red Devils in Towson, and the Red Devils is an organization that if you don't have transportation, they'll pick you up and they will bring you back. And there are also group organizations that are free, and every single hospital that you go to. I was treated at St. Agnes Hospital. My oncologist was Dr. Diana Griffiths, a fabulous woman. I'll just say it out there. I love her to pieces. My surgeon is Dr. Merchant, a fabulous man. And my plastic surgeon, Dr. Tagasadi. I was lucky enough to have. But the most important thing for me, and I'm going to tell you this.
Tell it to us.
My OB, Dr. Marion Davis, when he saw it and felt it and said, I am not worried, but to be safe, let's check it out. There are some people who say, let's just keep an eye on it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then they watch it. And by the time you get to it, it's way down the road.
Wow.
And I went to him and I sat in his office and I thanked him personally for being the kind of physician who says, I'm not worried, but let's check it out. And in doing so, he was able to catch it at an early stage.
That's awesome.
Awesome, awesome.
So I give my credit where credit is due. I was blessed with some terrific physicians.
Yes.
And that's why I'm here. I was blessed with terrific colleagues, terrific church, and a fabulous family. And that's it. And God. There is God. Let's
not forget God. And we like to highlight them. And we're going to be doing that through one of our upcoming events that we did last year. Mm-hmm. Last year when Patrice, one of our interns, was suffering from breast cancer, she beat it. We made baskets for the other women that were receiving treatment there and took it to Bon Secure. And as a thank you to her doctor and her and the people going through the same thing, so she could be a testament and a real life vision of someone who survived it. And I think we're going to do the same thing with St. Agnes And
it's a terrific place.
I think
place.
It's like next week or the week
the
after.
The nurses are so caring. Mm-hmm. It's terrific. And that makes all the difference in the world. And I certainly live in, we are fortunate to live in an area where you have so many different hospitals that you could go to. Great hospitals. But as someone said to me, you want to go where they know your name and you're not a number.
Wow.
And that's why I went to St. Agnes and they certainly knew my name.
Well, we appreciate them for taking such good care of you.
Yes, and we appreciate you for coming to share your story with us. And we hope that your story can serve as a testimony to someone else that's going through this, that they feel more motivated and feel hope that someone else has gone through this and come out on the other end successful. So we know you have to get to see clients and continue the beautiful work that you do. So we'll let you go, and then I guess we'll continue to just talk about our different upcoming missions, and we'll go to our on our sofa.
On the couch.
On the
awesome.
Couch.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here.
All right. So that was good talking to Dr. Boy about that. We're going to go visit her clinic and drop off the stuff.
Yeah, it was such an experience last year to go to where Pat was.
You did go.
Yeah, I went. Yeah. I hold you down on the philanthropic tip. But to go to where she'd actually.
Did you have braids last year too?
No, I was natural last year. I was
you
all
were.
Natural.
You were. Mm-hmm. You had the mohawk.
Yes, I did. And y'all kept saying I look like Odell Beckham, but we're going to leave that alone. But we went, and it was such an experience to go there with the women who were actually receiving chemo at the time, and they seemed like they really appreciated
it. That one lady was really happy.
She was really very, very happy. She was a former showgirl.
A word.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
She did say that.
Mm-hmm.
If people want to see more about that, they could always go to our webpage, which is www.btstservices.com and click on BTST Cares, and you can check out all of our videos of some of the work that we do. We don't get a chance to record everything. Sometimes George doesn't fulfill his responsibilities as we would like. But we don't get a chance to record everything. But a lot of the stuff that we do is on there.
Mm-hmm.
So let's make this transition and talk about on the couch. Mm-hmm. Sofa? Couch.
The couch.
On the couch. Okay, so I got to remember this because I always call it sofa. Couch just sounds like what my grandmother had plastic on.
You know what? I call it a sofa too, like technically, but that's a mid-Atlantic thing.
Maybe I'm bougie. I say sofa.
Oh my God. Whatever. It's a mid-Atlantic thing. And so it's part of mid-Atlantic lingo to say sofa versus couch. But I think that when you talk about being on your therapist's couch, uh-huh. It's more
of a therapeutic experience.
Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. So we're on the couch. And on the couch with us today, drum roll please. Is so Carmelo Anthony is playing with a new basketball team now. Mm-hmm. He's formerly with the Knicks from Baltimore, West Baltimore in the building. He is gone to play with the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Mm, have fun there. I lived in Oklahoma
it's
for a very
thing.
Short time.
You lived in Oklahoma?
I'm an Army brat.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I just thought you were brat. I didn't know what Army came in front of that. I didn't know it was a prefix to that. So... Oklahoma, he's there now playing with Russell Westbrook, last year's MVP, and mm-hmm. Paul George. So it's a great opportunity for him.
Good for him.
Because in New York, they didn't have a chance of making the playoffs. He was miserable. It sucked. But now he's with a formidable team who actually has a chance to do something big.
Good for him.
And I know Melo, as a person, he had to make some tough decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're thinking about, in sports, as fans, we're always like, yeah, I want my person to go here, to go over there. Why he didn't go get traded? And Melo has been one of those people who has been down for the long haul. He stayed in Denver, and then he stayed in New York. He hasn't made those impulsive decisions maybe like someone like LeBron James has.
Yeah.
Or Dwayne Wade. He stayed where he is. And sometimes when you, as fans, we want to see our stars go to where we want them to go, and we don't think about the back end of these decisions, the behind the scenes, people that are impacted by these decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So today on our sofa, we want to talk about not just Melo making this decision to go play with a new team, but how it impacts his family.
Mm.
I know you're a family person, and a lot of decisions that you make are driven in with your family motto and
definitely
what's
so.
Going to be best for your family
mm-hmm.
and all those things. And I would like to think that I do the same.
You do.
Thank you. Say it again.
You do.
All right, just in case you're listening, wife. But no, we have to consider these things that when he makes this decision, it impacts his wife, it impacts his child, impacts his manager's family, all of that stuff. So speak to me from a clinician perspective about
terminating those relationships, what that anxiety of going somewhere new, what Mello may be going through. So if you're, so if Lala is our client, she come to sit on our sofa and look, and she looks very pretty nowadays on my Instagram. So she's sitting on our sofa, and you're going to talk with her, right? What would y'all talk about? What would you expect her to be experiencing, and how would you talk her through some of these things?
You know, I'm more interested in their kid and his experience.
I'm interested in Lala.
I know.
I'm a guy, Lala.
Follow her on Instagram.
That's why I'm not her therapist, right? That's why I'm not her therapist. I'm not treating her. I'm not practicing. I'm just talking about from a soul fan.
Just,
I'm a
fan. You know, psychiatrists can date their clients after a year. After they've been terminated for a year, they can date their clients. I'm just saying, as an FYI, I know.
And I don't plan on. I will keep my practice strict to, you know, not Lala. Anybody else but Lala and Beyonce.
Oh my gosh. So what I'll say is I think that it's more interesting to really think about the perspective from their kid. And it's crazy that we just talked about me being an Army brat, because yes, that was my experience frequently.
Oh, you did move
around. Yeah, I had to move around because of my father's job. And so what my experience was that as long as my family system was stable, then the moving was something that I was able to, it wasn't as difficult for me because I was able to have a safe home base.
Because both of your parents went wherever you all went.
We all went as a family and as a unit. And as long as that was consistent and I had consistency with those people, it was my mother, my father, my sister, and I. So as long as our unit stayed stable, then I was fine. But I'm also a little bit of an extrovert. And so I can make a friend. I will make a friend out of a rock.
Yeah. You know? So, you made a friend out of me, so.
I know. C-Rock. So, you know.
C-Rock.
So I will make a friend out of anybody, you know, if you give me 5 minutes to talk to you. But as long as the family system is stable and they can keep some of his routine stable and things that are familiar to him stable, he'll be able to then feel comfortable enough and secure enough to go out and branch out and make new friends in school, make new friends in their neighborhood, which I'm sure is a very nice neighborhood, a very lavish neighborhood. You know, so I don't know, the houses may be too far apart.
I don't know if it's New York.
I don't know.
I don't know if it's going to be a New York penthouse. But that has to be a scary experience for, like, a young man going to a place he's not familiar, mm-hmm. Your dad already being a star. So partially you could be beloved because mm-hmm. you're Carmelo's son. Mm-hmm. Or you could be hated because people think that you think that you're something special. So how is that anxiety for a child?
So with parents, we are something special. So for our parents, he's not a celebrity, but people will attribute those things, his parents' qualities to him. And that's just because that's just human nature to do that. But parents, I don't like to say should, but the way that it's all designed is for parents to love you just because you exist. And so if your parents love you just because you exist, not because you're cute, not because you're smart, not because you're funny or any of those things, those are extras. But think about when you had your children and they were first born, you didn't know those children when they came out and you saw them in the hospital and they were screaming, hollering and crying, but you feel this love, this automatic love and appreciation for them without them demonstrating any personality at all. So if you can get that firm base where somebody loves you just because you are here, then the other things will follow. Gotcha. So then you feel safe enough to go out and explore the world because you don't have to, I mean, look at me and my ridiculous amount of confidence that I have for absolutely no reason. My mama loved me. So so because she does, if I come across people, you know, in the rest of the world that don't particularly care for me, I think something must be wrong with them.
So, but Lala, speaking for Lala,
You're talking about Lala a lot today.
No, because I think that, you know, all jokes aside about, you know, my women crush, she's been one of those. But all jokes aside, she's going to be dealing with a lot as well. Because she has a career that requires her to be in New York, that requires her to be in L.A. So she won't be able to always be in Oklahoma City. And I'm not, you know, that's not saying anything bad about Oklahoma. Just saying that that's not the media markets that she builds in. Mm-hmm. So what is that going to be like co-parenting? Because I'm pretty sure that's one of her concerns, is that she wants to make sure that he keeps times with his dad, mm-hmm. and that she can also be a supportive mom while working and all that other stuff. What would be some suggestions that you give her as her therapist?
Well, the first thing I would say is I don't know if they're really together or not. I know their relationship is kind of in flux, but what I've read.
Oh, really?
That's not an end for you. You have a very lovely wife.
Yes,
but what I've read is that. Is that they are both committed to co-parenting.
Yes.
And I would tell her to not, don't beat up on yourself. There's a book called The Good Enough Mother, and what it suggests is that we don't have to be perfect as parents. We just have to kind of be good enough. And what I've noticed in clinical practice as well, Two is that children are incredibly forgiving. And if you are consistent enough, and when I say consistent enough, I think it's something like responding to a child's needs a little bit less than half of the time. And when I say that, I don't mean like don't feed your children. But if you're cooking in the kitchen and your child is screaming and hollering for your attention, they can wait a couple, unless they're in danger of some sort. Acknowledge them a little bit and say, I see you. Mommy sees that you're crying, but, you know, keep it moving and make dinner. And then you can give them all the love that you can muster after dinner. But, you know, so what I would say with her is that spend enough time with him. Make sure that he knows that he's important and work well with his father. And, of course, not speak poorly about him. And your kids should be pretty okay.
But I know sometimes in situations like these, it's almost like a when you're co-parenting. Let's just assume that they are together, unfortunately. But no, let's assume that they are together and he's in Oklahoma and she's in New York. It's not the same family dynamic he's been used to for the last few years, right? Mm-hmm. And while you're good enough, that could also lead to some his behavior could become attention seeking and acting out. Mm-hmm. If that was the case, how would you advise her to handle these things?
Pay him attention. So, you know, a lot of times we think of like attention-seeking behaviors. It's a symptom of a problem. And so if what you're seeking is more attention, it's because you're not getting enough. And this isn't shade on Lala or Carmelo. I'm just saying in general that when children are seeking more attention, it's because they're not getting enough. And what they're really asking is, please make me feel secure. Hmm. Make me feel secure. Let me know that everything is okay.
So what would be some techniques and things that she can do? And the only reason I know we're talking about Lala, but there some of our listeners maybe going through something similar where they're thinking about making a life choice that may impact their kids, and hopefully something that we could say, advice that we could give, we encourage them to further their career or do whatever is best for them in that situation.
So the thing that I would say is most important is pay spend intentional time with your children and make the
Does that mean when I'm watching TV they just come watch it with me?
That is so, I mean, that can be really sweet though. But make sure that you also let them know we can watch your show too. Like I can't tell you how many times I've watched episodes of The Loud House.
The Loud House?
Yes.
Is that the one with like 10 girls and one guy?
Yes.
I think that's the show that has my son in trouble now.
But, you know, you want to let him know that it's just not mommy's show.
I'm in a Peppa Pig phase right now with my youngest.
Well, have fun with Peppa Pig. We went through a Peppa Pig phase, too. I had to buy a Peppa Pig bathing suit for my daughter and everything. But no, you want to let him know that their thoughts and interests are important as well. So if we're watching The Loud House and we can talk about it a little bit, it lets you know mommy's watching what you're watching, the daddy's watching what you're watching, and I think it's interesting too. So tell me a little bit about it. So it doesn't have to be I got to take you on a grand vacation or anything like that. It's the small things that make a lot of, you know, that make a big impact when you're riding in the car together. Turn the music down a little bit or sing with your children. We have dance parties in the kitchen.
We get it in.
Yeah.
We listen to Kids Bop and we just like, we start doing all the little dance moves and all that stuff. I'm Sounds really like my a husband. Geek. Uh-huh. Then we have karaoke. They want to perform, and then we paint. Mm-hmm. So I try to. I know we work a lot, but I try to do some paint stuff with them.
Yeah, because
they like to do those things. My son is not really a big athlete. Mm-hmm. Well, the youngest one is, but my older one, he's not really a big athlete. Mm-hmm. So try to find the different things that he likes to do.
That's his interest. Yeah,
and especially this weekend, being that my wife is going away to homecoming, I have a lot of time on my hands.
Oh man,
so I'm trying to figure out what we're gonna do, but. Deliberate time, you said, right? Intentional time.
Also, do you remember when you brought your kids home from the hospital, skin to skin, they make a big deal out of that.
Yes.
You put the babies against your naked skin. Well, don't do that with your older children. But also, don't do skin to skin. But affection goes a long way.
Her remarks did not represent the views of BTS services.
Affection goes a long way. You know, positive praise, but praise that actually deserves praise. Not just praise, you know, not praising half mediocre work, but, you know, when they actually do something good, catch them doing something well. You know, when they walk into the room, you know, there's this thing Oprah used to say all the time, does your face light up when someone walks through the room? Are you genuinely happy to see them? And children are like little detectives. They know if you're genuine or not. They get it right away. So find the positive in your kid. You know, see, he may be cute. He may be funny. He may be awesome. He may be a little baby jerk. You know, jerks got to start off somewhere. You know, adult jerks, they started off as baby jerks.
What are you trying to say?
And I'm sure you had a mother that loved you too. But, you know, even if he's a baby jerk, that's your baby jerk. So you make sure that you identify those attributes. That it may not just be jerk, he may be headstrong. You know, he may be somebody that's really strong-willed or, you know, has a different quirky sense of humor.
Embrace that.
You got to embrace it, yeah, and help him to develop it and correct it when it goes too far. Because correction is also something that children crave as well. Give me boundaries. Let me know what's good. Let me know what's not right. And help me to be able to monitor myself.
So you would advise Lala that it will be all right?
Yeah, he will be fine. And he's already been born to a celebrity home. So I'm sure they've already got systems in place for him and things that they've developed over time. All families are different. And the thing that we have in common is the love. And so they've probably figured out a long time ago what works for their family. And this will just be an extension of that.
Okay. So, Lala, when you check out, you can please pay your copay at the front with, with Jada McCray. No, I'm just kidding.
Cash only, Lala.
So, this was another episode of Meeting You Where You Are. This was out on a sofa version. If you have topics or anything that you would like for us to discuss on the sofa, please make sure that you send them to us. I don't even know how you would contact us. Oh, you can send it through our website, which is btscservices.com. You can go to our Inquire Now or contact us and send us a message. We'll be putting up our podcast on there and just like some feedback. So if you want to leave a message, then let us know how the podcast impacts you. If there are other topics that you would like to hear us discuss, and just all that other stuff. If it's topics for on the sofa, we welcome those.
On the couch.
On the couch, jeez. I just got to think about my grandmother when I say that. Couch just sounds like an old person.
Then just call it the sofa. You want to call it the chaise? That seems more up your...
The chaise?
The chaise lounge.
The chaise lounge.
That seems more your speed anyway.
Nah, I'm going to keep it with this couch. I'm not going to come up with a new...
I'm not going to put you out there and tell people that you literally have a chaise lounge.
I do not have a chaise lounge. I have a chair with spikes in the back. Well, this has been another great episode. I think we had Dr. Boyer on, which was awesome.
Yeah.
We had Lala on. we had on the sofa. So Jada, thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
So this next episode, you're going to introduce yourself, right?
I'll think about it. I think I'm host worthy, like by somebody else. But
okay, we'll see how that goes. Stay tuned. Thank you.